Hey, Ethan, I know you want to talk about Final Fantasy VII and whatever the remake is called. Its name keeps changing, I think. But what if we talk about traffic cone crabs instead?
I never don't want to talk about crabs. And I think I know what game you're going to talk about now.
Have you played Cassette Beast?
I have.
Really? Awesome. Great. That'll make this conversation even better. I haven't beaten it yet, though.
So. No, me. I haven't played a ton of it, but...
Oh, well. Get back on it.
I should. It's on my list. I have a list on my phone of games I need to go back and wrap up, and it is on it.
Well, it's a good thing there's nothing interesting coming out in the next few days to take up your time.
Laughter.
Yeah, I know. You're super stoked for the Final Fantasy VII Part 2?
Rebirth.
Remake? Rebirth. And then there's like Retrograde or...
So, there's Remake was the first part, and then Rebirth is the second part. Mm-hmm. There was also... Rebirth came out on PS4, and then they re-released it on PS5 with like a DLC couple of episodes. And that re-release was called Intergrade.
And Intergrade.
The DLC was called Episode Intermission. Yeah. So now we've got Rebirth. And the third one will come out at some point. It will probably be called Reunion. But I don't know.
The third one. They
already called the Crisis Core remake Reunion. So maybe not. But Reunion makes sense for lore reasons. So
sure. I do want to play Reunion, the Crisis Core 1, because I actually played Crisis Core.
Oh, you did?
And cried at the end. Yeah, I played that a long time ago.
Okay.
And it was so good and so sad. And I was such a nerd back then that I would make, like, banner art to put on signatures on forums.
Oh, yeah.
And I made one of, like, Cloud with the Buster Sword, and the reflection in it was Zack. Like, yeah. We don't need to talk about that part of my life. But anyway.
I didn't realize you'd played Crisis Core. That's great, because I am slowly bullying you into playing every Final Fantasy thing, so...
Oh, no, not all of them.
No, just the original game and then the remake trilogy. I'm not going to make you play Dirge of Cerberus, but if you've already played Crisis Core, that's great, because that's... that doesn't completely obviate the need for you to play the original game, I don't think, but it is, like, helpful. Like, I think it will definitely make the remakes more interesting if you have the additional... Just because, obviously, the remakes are showing a lot of the flashback stuff again, you know? They're remaking the original game, so of course you have to include that stuff. But, like, Remake is definitely a game that I think kind of expects you to have played the older stuff. And so some of this, like, it will allude to stuff in Crisis Core that I think if you haven't played the older stuff, you're just like, okay, I don't know what that means. And even if you've played just the original Final Fantasy VII, but not Crisis Core, like, it might not hit as hard, because in the original Final Fantasy VII, Zack is, like, a dude that Cloud mentions at a certain point and is in, like, one, like, brief polygonal flashback, you know? So it's like, like, you get the gist that he is sad, that it's sad that Zack died in Cloud's backstory, but it's not, like... He's not a character in the way that he is in Crisis Core.
So I'm starting to remember things. This was back at a point in my life where my memory was functional, and I have names. I'm like, Angeal, was that Zack's mentor?
Okay, I'm gonna level with you. I don't remember Crisis Core that good. Crisis Core, like,
thing I remember, Ethan.
I remember Zack, like, what he was like as a character. And kind of sort of the general shape of that game. Angeal is one of the dudes that hangs out with Sephiroth a lot. There's Sephiroth and Angeal and Genesis.
Genesis, yeah.
And I remember Angeal and Genesis being there, and I remember that, like, one of them is the final boss. I think Angeal might be.
No, I feel like Angeal was the mentor. Do we have to kill the mentor?
I mean, I'm pretty sure you have to fight all of them. You might not fight Sephiroth, since he's... I mean, you certainly don't kill Sephiroth in Crisis Core, but I think you had to fight Genesis and Angeal at, like, towards the end. I just don't remember which one is, like, the last guy you fight.
All right, we clearly, or at least I do, need to play the reunion version so I can remember that. Because I thought, like, Zack had his mentor, Angeal, and that's where, like, the Buster Sword came from, and then he died, and Zack got the new haircut, hairdo, and then Zack died. Spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't played Crisis Core. And then Cloud got the Buster Sword. Yeah.
It's entirely possible. I don't remember. I don't remember the deal with Angeal and Genesis at all. I remember Genesis. Genesis, I think, is more so like the bad guy in that game. But I think Angeal also.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, it goes crazy at some point or something, because, like, kind of all of them do.
You know, I said it was Cloud with Zack's face, but I am wondering if it was Zack with Cloud's face in the sword. Son of a bitch. Moving on.
Yeah. We could talk about Final Fantasy things later. Let's get back to cassette piece.
Right. So I downloaded Final Fantasy VII on the Switch, and then I started playing Cassette Beasts. And and it is so good. So you were more of, like, the Digimon guy, more than a Pokemon guy. But you like, experienced Pokemon in some forms, right?
Oh, I was all about both. Like, I played the Pokemons up through, like, third gen, and then I dipped out for a while, and I came back with X and Y.
Yeah.
And I've been back on that train. Well, I haven't played Scarlet and Violet.
That's good.
And I only got, like, halfway through Sword and Shield.
Yeah, but I mean, that's totally fair. I think X and Y is where it just kind of, like, they came back and then they went away with X and Y.
I thought
in terms of quality.
I thought Sun and Moon were neat.
Yeah, those were interesting. But anyway, so having grown up with Pokemon, and as an adult being like, okay, Pokemon has not grown up with me, and it's only getting dumber in terms of just, like, quality and what they expect children to be able to figure out, and puzzles, things of that nature. There's just that Pokemon-shaped void in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And Cassette Beasts has filled that and also totally exceeded expectations.
Yeah.
And it is such a wild story. As I started this game and got into it, just a few minutes in, I'm like, Ethan needs to play this game. It has Ethan written all over it. How far did you get? Then we can kind of explain what it is.
Not super far. I went to a train station and there was a fucked up weird thing. I remember that much.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, I was in a bunch of caves, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I remember fighting kind of a big robot that I think was, like, a fusion of some other smaller dudes. And I don't remember if it was, like, a boss or not, or if it just happened to be, like, a guy that I fought, that I was like, this design is memorable to me. And was, like, one of the last things that I fought before switching to something else. But I was, like, not very far.
Okay, yeah, so we're probably way ahead of you then. Okay, I don't even know how to properly describe this, but Cassette Beasts is like, you wake up on the shore of this world that seems to be a strange limbo hub of where people from various multiverses and versions of Earth also mysteriously show up at.
It's a cassette beach. And get stuck
permanently. It's a cassette beach. Yep. And the people there figured out how to catch these monsters, not catch, but record these monsters' data in cassettes. And then they have the data on the tape and can turn into not summon, but turn into that monster when they play the tape. And I'm like, this reminds me of Horizon Zero Dawn. Do you know why?
Why?
Because I'm like, what is this nonsense? This story doesn't make any sense. What are these big robots doing here? This makes no sense, but it's so good. It just works.
But Horizon makes so much sense when you learn the backstory.
Yeah, when you get there to figure out, like, oh, but it's really hard to convince my mind that this makes sense in Horizon Zero Dawn at the beginning. Like, how do these monsters persist? These giant robot animals.
That reminds me of a Grant Morrison interview that I think I sent you the clip like a while ago, like a few months ago, where Grant Morrison is on a panel at a Comic-Con or something. For anybody not aware, Grant Morrison is a pretty prolific comic book writer who is responsible for some of my all-time favorite comics. Grant Morrison had this great interview, and someone asked, how old is Batman? Because this was when Grant Morrison was writing Batman. And Grant's answer, I thought, was very interesting. Basically, like, no offense, but, like, that's not a good question, because it's not a good way to think about media, basically. Use the example of, like, if you show a child The Little Mermaid, like, they understand that, like, crabs don't really talk and stuff. And they just understand, like, this is a story, and it's more fun for the story that the crab talks. But if you show, like, a similar piece of fiction to an adult, like Batman, you know, if you show Batman to an adult, then they'll be like, well, how is he, like, funding all of this? How, you know, how does he not have broken bones all the time? How did he get so good at martial arts? How old is he? Like, all of that kind of stuff. And it's like, the answer is, it's a comic book. And it's better for the story if it works that way. And I think it's really interesting, especially coming from Grant Morrison. And I think that's a good thing to keep in mind in media, right? It's just like, sometimes you just gotta say, like, this is the way that it is because it makes sense for the story for it to be that way. Batman is kind of middle-aged-ish, but usually, because that's mostly when stories about him would make sense. Sometimes he's older if you want to tell a story about old man Batman, and sometimes he's younger if you want to talk about, like, young, just starting out Batman.
Batman is whatever he wants to be, as the story needs.
None of that had shit to do with Horizon or Cassette Beasts. What am I doing?
I eventually found the train of thought. And that is to say that it doesn't matter if this makes sense, as long as it works.
Anyway.
So my hang-up with Cassette Beasts and Horizon is, when I look at them from afar, I'm like, how is that compelling, right? I'm like, it's so weird that I don't know how it's gonna work out. And then I get into those games and I'm like, this is rad. And the mystery of Cassette Beasts, where all these people are appearing in this world, new world, however you pronounce that word, they don't know how they got there. They don't know why they're there. They don't know a way off. And now you're the protagonist and changing things. And that mystery is really interesting. It really makes me want to know what is going on. And one of the reasons I thought you'd really like this game is that thing you found in the train station is an archangel. And it has all of these like religious references that made me think of what you like about Digimon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it, like, the mystery just keeps layering on. And have you looked at the type chart?
I mean, I might have when I was playing it, but not any time recent enough that I remember it at all.
I looked at it and I was like, oh, no, too much. Like, too much stuff. Too many types, too many status effects. I don't know what to do with this. My brain is like, nope. But two things happened. One is that I played the game more and things made sense naturally, and it had good tutorial pop-ups. But I was like literally 3 minutes into the game when Fran came up behind me and was like, oh, this looks cute. What is this? What's going on? And so we have, since that 3 minute mark, played it co-op, because you can take over the companion that's with you and play it completely co-op. And I'm like, they didn't have to do that, but it's so cool they did.
Hell yeah.
And Fran has a great memory, so type chart.
That's how I function in tabletop games mostly, is I'm terrible at remembering rules, but I have one consistent player who, anytime a question comes up during gameplay, I'm like, yeah, how does that work, Sonny? They're just like, oh, like this. Yep. Cool. Good, good, good.
Oh, I would love to have a memory like that. It's just refreshing having played, like, not Violet and Scarlet, but the last two generations of Pokemon, and just being like, wow, Game Freak just does not give a shit. and just, like, having a game that's actually targeted at my demographic, my age group, and have it be thought-provoking. And you probably haven't gone this far, but the characters are, like, effortlessly endearing, and they have these little nuggets of wisdom about life in the real world and life here in this weird world, and it's just so fucking wholesome.
Yeah, I definitely need to jump back in. I really liked what I played. I mean, it's got the whole, like, 8-bit, or, well, not 8-bit, but, you know, pixel art aesthetic that I really, really like. And just as someone who is, like, a big music nerd, conceptually, just, like, making a, instead of having your, like, 6 Pokeballs or whatever on your belt, you're making, like, a sick-ass mixtape of monsters. It's just fucking rad.
And even weirder, like, you always have a companion with you, and they have their own, like, you can put what cassette they have in their player and what cassette you have in your player, and then you each individually transform into whatever those beasts are at the start of combat. But when your fusion meter fulls, you can fuse your beast form with their beast form and get this wild amalgamation of those two things. And they have, like, it's pretty obviously, like, components of each thing that they cram together, but they have unique art in that way for every single possible fusion. There are over 16,000 fusions.
That's a lot.
That is a lot. There's like 128-ish, I think, actual, like, unique beasts, and then that many fusions. I'm like, wow, man.
That's rad.
Gotta catch them all.
I legitimately think that might have been part of why I dropped it, is because I'm a horrible completionist, and seeing how many, like, fusions I'd need to grab, I was like, ooh, this might be, like, a project sometime when I don't have, like, other games to play.
And I think that is absolutely not the intent, because you don't even get to keep the fusions. They just happen and then unfuse. It, like, catching the individual monsters is probably very achievable and doing all the side quests. I don't think the developers were like, someone's going to complete this and do all 16,000 plus. I mean, there's probably some psycho out there who has, without cheating, maybe. But, like, don't do that to yourself. Don't be a psycho.
You say that, but you're talking to somebody who got all of the flags in the original Assassin's Creed.
I don't even know how many that is, but I'm sorry.
I don't remember, but it's one of the worst things I've ever done in a video game. It was god-awful, and there's no reward.
Really?
Yep.
The reward is self-loathing.
It's true. That was like a decade and a half ago or something, and I haven't forgiven myself.
Well, hopefully the journey and cassette piece will be better to all 16,000 plus fusions. But no, I really hope you get back to it. And one of the first monsters you encounter is the traffic crab, which is a little crab with a traffic cone. And it is so cute. And I'm also like, there's crabs. Ethan, why aren't you playing this game? There's crabs. You can evolve, remaster. They call it remaster. You can remaster your crab. You can bootleg your crab. You can fuse your crab. What more do you want?
What is bootlegging? I don't remember.
That is where you encounter a beast that is a different type from its normal.
Oh, okay. So it's like a variant thingy.
Yeah.
That's
but
cool.
Not to be confused with a coding status effect, which temporarily changes their type.
Gotcha.
I haven't encountered one in the wild yet, but there are so many cool mechanics. There's walls that you put up, and those can absorb 3 hits. But you also have like multi-attacks, so you can kind of like chip through those quickly. There's also moves that destroy walls and like send them back at the user to deal the damage from the remaining wall count.
Mm.
It's okay. There's Stardegrade. Did you ever encounter that one? The weird little water bear floaty worm with jetpacks?
I think so.
Well, it's weird and fugly, but it hibernates and just tanks everything. And
yeah, that yeah. sounds familiar.
It is just so quirky. Like, I can't get over how spirited this game is. Like, how much love and ridiculousness. But it makes sense, and it's emotional. And there's these creepy archangels.
Hell yeah.
Also, someone like straight up got fucking red misted.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. So you can look forward to that.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to bump that up my list. I think after I finish Rebirth, I'm supposed to play Baldur's Gate finally.
Oh, yeah, me too. Fran's like, are you ever going to play Baldur's Gate more?
I'm genuinely kind of relieved that we're in the same boat on that one. I feel like you're the only person I know that had somewhat similar of a journey to mine with that game.
Well, the thing is, Baldur's Gate is an amazing game, and I like it, and I want to play it, but I'm just a terrible person when it comes to most things. Like,
that's not true.
I will love a game or a hobby. I will love a game or hobby for a while and then just suddenly be like, meh, off the cliff.
Oh, yeah.
And I hate it because I want to go back and play Baldur's Gate, but I'm like, oh, I have to sit at my computer and it'll take energy and thought. So I'm just going to sit here and do nothing instead.
Mm-hmm.
Or I will play all of the main plot of Mario Wonder, which was fun, and then try Fae Farm, which was a mistake, but also pretty cool until it isn't. And then I'm like, oh, Roots of Pacha. I had this weird video game craving like these past 2 weeks in the form of Stardew Valley adjacent and also Pokemon, which is why I'm here with Cassette Beasts. And yeah.
Have you jumped into Pal World yet?
No. No, I watched Girlfriend Reviews and a Donkey video, and I'm like, that's enough. That's enough Pal World for me.
A couple of my friends were into it. I think they've dropped it by now, but that first like week or so of release, they were jamming on it pretty hard. And I pretty much avoid, not like went out of my way to avoid, but I just like didn't, I was just like, oh, that, you know, that's cool. And then a group that I enjoy did like a let's play in it that came out like this past Monday. And that was my first, or I guess last Friday. That was my first actual like watching anyone play it. And mostly I was just like, oh yeah, this looks pretty much like I expected from what I'd heard. You know, I'm enjoying like watching these four idiots play it, but, but then one of them made a harness to like pick up his little fox guy and use him as a flamethrower. And I was like, maybe I should download this.
Did you?
No, I'm playing Final Fantasy.
There we go. Yeah. It's one of those games where like 5 years ago, I probably would have been all over it. Because for a long time, I have loved the survival, well, love, hate the survival genre of like, chop down trees and pick up rocks and start a base and just, you know, like Valheim.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, like, you know, basically the Pokemon ripoffs, and they have guns, and there's all these cool, like, factory production things you can do. But Sarah today is like, I just don't care.
Yeah.
It's cool they have guns, but they're, like, not even doing much damage, and it's kind of janky, and I guess it'd be fun making them do, like, slave labor, but...
Yeah.
So, yeah. But it has more heart and innovation than the actual Pokemon mainline games, so.
I hope we get a new Digimon game relatively soon.
I hope we get a Digimon game that feels more AAA, if you
will. Oh, that's not gonna happen.
I mean, okay, like, I briefly tried Cyber Sleuth, and I do intend to get back to it one day. Like, it just so happened that I started it at the airport. And someone came over to me and was like, hey, do you want to get onto this flight early instead of the one you're on? So I put it away a few minutes into it. And then all sorts of airport shenanigans happened, and I just haven't gone back into it since.
Yeah.
But it just has that, like, you know, PS2, PS3 era of, like, mm-hmm. here's these weird-looking dungeon spaces that you walk through. And mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah.
What I would dearly love, because they've said there's been a new one in that, like, specific series of, it's the Digimon Story series. There has been another one in production for a while now. Everyone keeps, it's slowly becoming like a Duke Nukem Forever style, like, vaporware. Like, yeah, they keep saying that there's one. Like, recently Bandai announced that they wanted to focus on making better games, basically. Like, they're like, yeah, we've been putting out a lot of just kind of, like, B-level garbage, and we want to cut back on that and make the stuff that we're making actually be good, which is cool. And, like, immediately the Digimon subreddit was like, oh, so that story game is, like, one of the 12 games that got canceled, right? Like, that's gone now.
Oh.
And I guess, I didn't follow it super closely. I guess someone confirmed that, no, it is still in development. I guess the guy that has been heading up Digimon games, like, the director of the last several or whatever, has been, like, moved to a different project, but the game is still in development, or something. But at any rate, supposedly it's focusing on this specific set of Digimon called the Olympus 12 that are all based on, you know, the gods of Olympus. And like, ideally, in a perfect world, it will be a more polished game than Cyber Sleuth, and, like, I don't know, maybe each of those 12 guys could have, like, a cool, unique, like, zone so that, yeah, not all of the dungeons are just like, it's like a blue walkway in cyberspace.
Yeah. That would be cool. And, like, I don't even need super fancy graphics or anything like that. I'm totally happy with graphics like Cassette Beasts, where it's a little more stylized.
One of the things I really like about Cyber Sleuth, as a quick aside, is that you can get a status effect called, like, a dot or something, and it turns your guy into pixel art, like 8-bit pixel art.
Oh,
of the yeah. And it's, they have a specific sprite for every single Digimon in game, so it's always, like, actually a sprite of that guy. It's not just, like, a generic, you know, like, black and white Agumon or something like that, which I think is really cool. But
I love that. I don't know, I'm starting to appreciate more and more games that include, like, weird meta things. So, you know, one of my earlier experiences with it would be Undertale, with, spoiler alert, Flowey messing with your save data and, like, things getting weird mm-hmm. in ways they shouldn't. And there's been lots of, I think, examples since then, but I appreciate that weird meta touch.
I do too. I mean, that's why you were such a big Doki Doki Literature Club fan, right?
Oh God, I love Doki Doki Literature Club. What are we talking about? Doki 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 Heartbeat.
there was like a PC horror game that I think did a bunch of that stuff.
That is not what I expected.
Yeah, I think that was the deal, was that it marketed itself as like a fun, like chill high school visual novel thing, and then at a certain point things like super go off the rails, and I think it does some of that weird meta shit where it's like, to get to certain chapters you have to go into like the actual like game files, like from your desktop and all that kind of stuff.
Man, yeah, I love it, aside from the horror aspect. that's something else I'm enjoying about Cassette Beasts, isn't so much like meta effects, except for when you encounter archangels, it just does like weird things to your screen, and they're in a weird art style that doesn't fit. And
I love that.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, I think I've sold Cassette Beasts to you. You already have it, so didn't have to sell very much.
Well, I might have to buy it. I played it because it was on Game Pass initially. I don't know if it still is.
Oh. Okay. And I've been playing on the Switch. It really is a great drop-in, drop-out co-op game too, if Caitlin likes it.
I might be able to sell her on that. She likes Pokemon, so, which I mentioned mostly because she's not generally big on turn-based RPGs, but there are some exceptions, so.
Yeah. Okay, so, yeah, that was the main thing I wanted to talk about, is Cassette Beasts, and I thought Mario Wonder was fun. It was like a nice brain break to just go through those levels and experience the trippy acid stuff.
Yeah, I gotta pick that up sometime. I've heard nothing but good things about it.
Yes, it's very charming. It's nice to see them in a different kingdom. Not that I've played a whole lot of Mario games, actually. But there's something about it. Oh, there's like these really difficult levels that unlock more difficult levels. And I'm like, that's nice. That's nice that those exist. You know, for when I hate myself.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what I've been up to.
Speaking of hard levels, I've been replaying Final Fantasy Remake in preparation for Final Fantasy Rebirth, and I just today I finished up the DLC, the episode intermission, which I'd never played before, because when I originally bought Final Fantasy VII Remake, it was on PS4, and I didn't have a PS5 until like a year ago, and then I just never went back and bought Intergrade. I thought about it a few times, but I never did. And then like a week ago or whatever, when I decided all of a sudden, wait, no, I need Rebirth. Like, I need it immediately. Because I've been planning on waiting, and then my brain was just like, don't do that, stupid, get it right now. And they had the Final Fantasy VII twin pack that was both Remake and Rebirth for the same price as just buying Rebirth.
That's cool.
Yeah, and it included, you know, Intergrade or whatever. So I was like, well, if I'm gonna be spending the same amount of money, I might as well buy like the PS5 version and get the DLC. So I've been doing that, and I decided to do something inadvisable, which is I've decided that I want to get the Platinum Trophy on Remake.
Oh no, don't do it.
Which I avoided back on PS4 solely because one of the achievements is to beat the entire game on hard mode. And that's not normally something that I do because I don't care.
I don't like those achievements because I don't always want to play the game again anyway.
Yeah, when I was like 16 and I had time, maybe, like, I can remember when Fire Emblem, like Awakening or whatever. The one that had Fromm, is that his name?
That is a name of a Fire Emblem character that I play in Super Smash Bros. Ultimate.
Yeah, the dude who looks like Marth but isn't Marth.
Yeah, but isn't also Ike.
Right.
I mean, Ike doesn't really look quite like Marth, actually.
Ike looks closer to Roy, but beefy. But at any rate, yeah. Whenever that one came out on like DS or 3DS or whatever it was, I like can distinctly remember getting, you know, at the start of the game, it asks you, like, do you want characters to die when they hit zero health or just be like unconscious or whatever? And I was like, well, obviously, like permadeath, of course. I'm a Final Fantasy Tactics veteran, thank you very much. Like, where's the risk if there's no permadeath? And I would just, you know, occasionally have to play a level like two or three times to make sure that none of my special boys died. And today, like, 32-year-old Ethan, fuck that forever. Like, When I got like three houses or whatever a few years ago, and I think it has that option as well, I was just like, no, come on. I don't want to fuck around with that.
If you're going to replay the level to prevent the death, are you really playing it with permadeath?
Yeah.
It's like you just made it harder for yourself.
Right. Yes, exactly.
But not in the way they intended.
Yeah. Right. That was my intent.
That's like Baldur's Gate 3 has an honor mode now where you start that honor mode style game and it saves
once
on one file and it just keeps overwriting it for you. And if you wipe out or your characters die, I guess you're going to start over.
I am very... See, with a game like that, I'm very much... Most of the time, unless something really fucking catastrophic happens, I try to just go with the flow. Like if I do, you know, if I resolve some side quest in, like, a certain way and it turns out that, like, uh-oh, that ended up doing something that I don't love, I'll still be like, well, but that's like the choice that I made. Again, unless it's something like super catastrophic where it's like, oh no, like I picked this dialogue option because I thought this would happen and instead like four of my best friends were murdered or whatever.
Looking at you, Assassin's Creed.
But Caitlin is not that way. Caitlin is yes, Caitlin is very much like, oh, I don't like that, never no, rewind.
I'm probably somewhere in between. I really don't like when dialogue options are unclear. Yeah, and then I'm like, well, that's not at all what I intended to happen. Why would you do it like that?
Did you ever play LA Noir
for like 5 minutes literally?
That was the most fun thing about that game. Because it had the interrogation scenes, right? Where your options, whenever somebody would like make a statement, would just be like, you can choose to believe them or doubt them, or I think there was a third option, maybe. Half the time, they would say like, oh, you know, the person would be like, yeah, I was at the bodega on Tuesday at 9, so I couldn't have been there or whatever at the murder site. And it would be like, in my head, it would be like, okay, well, like, I have some other piece of evidence from this crime scene that points to this guy not having been at the bodega. Like, I don't think this is the guy that did the murder, but I think he's lying about this bodega thing, and so maybe I can get him to tell me something else. So you hit doubt with the hope that your character is just like, I don't know, you know, Tammy saw you over here at 8:30, so how could you have gotten all the way to the bodega or something? But inevitably, your character would be like, all right, you lying piece of shit. Like, just.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, that's not the approach I would have taken, Mr. L.A. Noir man, whose name I don't remember.
Angry man.
Yeah.
I don't enjoy those as much. I mean, if it's comical, I'm fine, but. Anyway, so that's all well and good. What's going on with Final Fantasy VII, though?
It's great. I love it. It's very good. I am really happy that I decided to replay Remake because I love that game. Final Fantasy VII was one of those things, one of those pieces of media that just, like, hit me at exactly the right time in my life for it to hit me. And just really has played such a big role in defining my, like, interests and aesthetics in the, like, the fantasy genre. And yeah, I love the characters, and the setting I think is really interesting, and it's got so many things that I love now that, like, looking back is like, oh yeah, probably a big reason why I'm into this is because when I was like 7 years old, it was introduced to me via Final Fantasy VII. I like big anime swords and big dumb anime fights and cosmic horror and like steampunk stuff and magical crystals and like...
Magical crystals are always the answer.
Yeah. So it's just been really fun. I think that Remake is... I know it was kind of controversial when it came out because there are a lot of people who don't like some of the changes that it makes to the story of Final Fantasy VII. Because of who I am as a person, I think all of the changes kick ass. Like, they're extremely my kind of thing. I don't want to get too much into, like, spoilery stuff, but it is doing something that I find really interesting and think elevates it beyond just being, like, a remake in an interesting way.
Yeah, it's so hard because it's a beloved piece of media that people have a lot of nostalgic love for. But, it, like, is it really better to make it one-to-one but pretty?
Right, yeah. I think what it's doing is so much better than what that would be. And there's so much just, like, expansion. And then, like, you could argue that some of it's not necessary. Like, there's a part in the original game where you briefly have to go through a place called the train graveyard that's just, like, it's just a bunch of old broken down trains. It's, like, two or three screens or something on the PlayStation version. And you just get through it pretty quick and get back to where you needed to go. And that's expanded into, like, an entire chapter with, like, a boss fight and, you know, puzzles and stuff in the remake. And it's like, do you need to do that? No. But it's cool. I don't know. It's fun.
Yeah, it's like an unexpected side of Final Fantasy with your Final Fantasy.
Yeah. And, yeah, it's just, I think it's doing really cool stuff narratively. I don't necessarily 100% agree with the execution, but I think conceptually, like, what they're doing is cool, and I'm looking forward to seeing how it carries through to the next game. And also, just, like, on a mechanical level, I fucking think it rocks. Like, I genuinely had forgotten how much I enjoy just playing it. It strikes, in my opinion, the perfect balance between the traditional turn-based Final Fantasy VII, the ATB system, the active time battle system that game used back on PlayStation 1, and a more modern action RPG. I think it's perfectly balancing both of those aspects in like a really cool and fun and engaging way. Like, Final Fantasy 16 came out more recently, right? And that's just a straight up action RPG. And I liked Final Fantasy 16. I think it's pretty good. I thought the story was interesting, and I thought the gameplay was fine, if a bit repetitive.
Mm-hmm.
I find Final Fantasy VII Remake like so much more engaging from a gameplay standpoint.
I'm glad you're mentioning that because, well, like, I don't think the combat or any part of the game is going to be bad. I just have not set aside the time to like work through these games, the original and then the remake. And it sounds exciting, right? It's like, man, why haven't I put in the time right now? Because it, like, I could be experiencing that.
Are you familiar at all with how Remake plays?
Only vaguely. I think, if I recall, you can kind of like switch between being like full action versus like pausing and picking your choices slowly.
Yeah, pretty much. So the way it works basically is you have a party of 1 to 3 characters, depending on where you are in the story. You control one person at a time, but you can switch between party members. Whoever you're not controlling is controlled by AI. And it is mostly just like a pretty traditional action game where square is attack and you just kind of wail on guys. Guys have like a stagger meter that you can fill up, etc. Every character has a unique action tied to the triangle button. So like for the main character Cloud, if you hit triangle, he changes stances. He's got his like regular stance, which is called operator mode, and his kind of heavy attack stance, which is called punisher mode. And you ideally, like, you'll mostly be staying in operator mode because it's faster, but then once you've staggered an enemy, it's usually a good idea to switch over to punisher mode because you move slower but you hit a lot harder. So if somebody is staggered and can't like dodge or attack back, then you can just really fuck them up in punisher mode. But at the same time, every character has ATB bars, which in the original game, like, when your ATB bar filled up, that was when your turn happened, right? ATB stands for active time battle. It basically just means that this is a little bar that fills up at a different rate depending on your character's speed stat. And when it fills up, you get to take your turn. In Remake, everybody has 2 of those bars, and they fill up faster if you are like attacking or guarding or taking damage or whatever. Like, if you're actively doing stuff, it fills up faster. And when one of those bars fills up, then you can hit X to bring up a command menu, which like freezes combat. It moves it. It, you know, makes it super, super, super slow. It puts you into like bullet time. And from there, you can like use one of the abilities that you've unlocked through like weapons. Everybody has like 6 different weapons. Every weapon has an ability tied to it. If you perform certain action, if you raise your proficiency with a weapon, then you unlock its ability permanently, even if you switch to a different weapon. So throughout the game, you're slowly learning more abilities through the different weapons that you acquire.
Okay, that makes sense.
So when you bring up your command menu, you can use one of the abilities that you've learned from your weapons. You can use spells from any materia that you have equipped. Every piece of armor and every weapon that you have has a certain number of materia slots. Materia are little magical crystals. So you can jam like 4 magical crystals into your sword and 3 of them into your armor. And then you've got 7 different spells to work with or whatever.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's great. And like the more you use materia, the higher level it gets. So the stronger the spells get, or the more, you know, options they open up or whatever. if you raise healing materia up to like level 3, then you unlock like the regen status so that you can just constantly be regenerating health, etc. So yeah, you can do abilities or spells, or you can use items also from the command menu. So it's just this fun balance of like, you want to be on the offensive so you can raise your ATB. Once you have ATB bars, you can like spend them on cool abilities. You want to, you know, tailor the abilities or spells that you're using to the enemy that you're fighting, because it's like, maybe, you know, this guy like staggers really easily, so you want to use Cloud's focused thrust ability because that is like really good at driving up the stagger gauge. Or maybe it's like, okay, this dude is staggered now, so you just want to hit him really hard, so use like the braver ability. Or there's a whole bunch of dudes on screen, use triple slash so that you ping pong between them, like that kind of stuff. Some abilities cost both of your ATB bars, so sometimes you need to like really let it fill all the way up so you can unleash something big. And also like healing, it costs ATB to heal, whether you're using a potion or a cure spell or whatever. So it's like, if you're fighting a really hard boss, then you need to be careful about like, hold off on your abilities because you're probably going to need to heal in a couple minutes, or, you know, stuff like that. And like, if you want to be careful about how you're distributing your materia, because like, if Cloud gets KO'd and he's the only one with heal or revive materia, then you're just down that party member for the whole fight. I mean, unless you have Phoenix Downs or something, but you know.
Yeah, that's really cool. I like the complexity of that and the quantity of decision points you have.
Yeah. And like there's 4 party members and they all play pretty differently. Cloud is like very basic swordsman guy. Tifa is like a martial artist and she's like really, really fast. And she has this ability called Unbridled Strength that like changes what her triangle button does. And so you want to like hit Unbridled Strength like a couple of times, so you get this like stack of different triangle abilities that you can then execute all in a row, and it like deals a ton of stagger damage and is like very useful. Barret has like a gun arm, and so he's like a long distance fighter. And Aerith is like totally magic based, and like everybody feels pretty different to play. The DLC focuses on a character named Yuffie, and she's a ninja with a giant throwing star, and like she plays totally differently than the characters in the main game. She's like super squishy, but she can like either just melee with her throwing star, or she can throw it, and then while it's like not in her hand, she can use ninjutsu that is like magic that doesn't cost MP basically. And she's all about figuring out the enemy's weaknesses so that you can like use ATB to switch your ninjutsu to the right element to be effective against that enemy. Like
this is so Japanese JRPG anime. It's like, how much can we fit into it? Yes. Yeah. All of it.
And then in Rebirth, there's going to be 2 more party members. In addition to the 4 from the first game and Yuffie, so there'll be 7 altogether. And presumably in whatever the third game is, they'll add the final 2 party members from the original game, who are both going to appear in Rebirth, but not be playable yet.
Ah, man. Do you think you will be younger than 40 by the time you get to play the third installment?
Yes.
Okay.
It was 5 years from the first one being announced to release. And it was 4 years from the first game's release to the second. So assuming another 4 or 5 years, I'm in my early 30s, so I should be below 40 still.
I'm perturbed that it's been 4 years. Like, that game's still new to me.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah, that came out recently. I should get around to playing it. 4 years. Fuck you.
Yeah. I feel much the same way. It's so good. There's just, I don't know. They really, like, threaded the needle, I think. I think it was going to be almost impossible to remake this game in, like, a satisfying way for most people. And obviously, like, there's a big chunk of people that don't like how it turned out. But I think the general consensus is that it's very good. And, yeah. And, I mean, you know, this is a game that came out in the 90s from a Japanese developer. So the original release, maybe not super cool about some stuff. Mm-hmm. Some stuff that really really aged quite badly in the original game. And I even think that for the most part, they did a good job of addressing that in Remake.
Oh, that's cool.
The scene that everyone was like eager but also nervous for is in the original game, you have to cross-dress to get into this, like, slumlord's mansion. And it was, like, not handled super great, like, kind of transphobic in the original. And, like, there's, like, a scene where Cloud, like, maybe gets gangbanged by a bunch of dudes. It's, like, not great in the original.
So I'm sorry, wait. We don't have to dwell on this very long. Do they, like, jump him and attempt, or, like, it actually happens?
It's, like, a spa scene, and, like, it's all, like, it's, like, a fade to black, and then there's just text boxes. But it's, like, it's weird. I don't know. At any rate, there are several dudes who are implied to be gay and not handled in a super good way in the original game.
Oh, man.
In this, like, honeybee in wall market segment. And so when Remake was coming out, everybody was like, well, how are they going to do the cross-dressing part? Because, like, it's, like, a fairly lengthy chunk of that segment of the game, right? Like, it's also, like, really, really well known. Like, surely they are going to have to do it in some capacity. And the way they ended up doing it is just, like, really, like, nice and wholesome.
Oh, good.
Yeah. It's, like, so cute. It's, like, you have to do a little, like, rhythm game to, like, dance on stage with this, like, fabulous drag man. And he gives, like, a little speech at the end after he's, like, made you over in a dress and stuff. And you look super pretty. He gives a little speech where he says... I'm probably going to get the line slightly wrong, but it's like, beauty is an expression of the heart, something to which ideas of gender don't apply. Like, never be afraid to express yourself, or something like that.
Damn.
And, yeah, it's just, like, really nice. And then, like,
yeah,
then you just, you know, wear this pretty dress for a little bit, and... everybody's like, oh, you look really nice, actually. And that's it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's nice. I have been refraining from bringing this up, but what I find most tragic is when you have all the potential squandered, right? Like, if this Final Fantasy remake had all the resources and potential, but then ended up being like, why? Why did you do that?
Right.
It's heartbreaking. So anyway, Avatar.
I, no joke, I had a feeling that that's where that was going to go.
We're only a few episodes in, and I'm just like, what interesting choices you've made. The costuming is so good, and, like, the casting makes sense, and the costumes are so good. But I just don't know. We can talk about that in another episode, but...
Yeah, I haven't watched any of it because our Netflix is being stupid. But I saw on Reddit the other day, somebody saying, like, I am not enjoying the direction they're taking Azula.
Oh no. I've only seen Azula like once or twice in the series so far. And there was something like really like up front off the bat that was kind of weird. And I can't remember what it was. Oh, but one thing they do that I'm kind of surprised is they just like burn people alive partially on screen.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I'm like, well, that was dark. Nice. So.
Oh, completely like orthogonal to that. But in the realm of live action adaptations of things and linking back to like video games, the trailer for the Borderlands movie came out. And I've played like a lot of Borderlands. Like it was just one of those franchises that like my friend group in high school and college, like we would just always, when a new Borderlands came out, hop in and play through it together. Right. Like, so I've played a fair amount of Borderlands. It's a franchise that Derek specifically has just made it his goal to have every achievement in like every Borderlands game. Like just kind of for kicks. And to the point that he like imported Japanese Borderlands because for some reason it has like a different trophy or achievement list. And anyway, neither here nor there. The trailer for the live action movie came out and I have zero confidence in this film. I don't like pretty much any of the people involved in like writing or producing or directing it.
Oh, God.
I was surprised at the trailer how close to the game it looks. Because I fully assumed, like, this is going to be, like, an in-name only, like, it's probably not going to resemble the game at all. Which, like, honestly, like, why would it? It's a franchise that barely has a plot, and the humor is, like, 20 years out of date. But I don't, it's just, it was such a weird experience to watch the trailer and be like, this really does look like somebody played the games a lot and like wanted to put it on screen. However, the casting is completely bonkers and I don't think any of it is good. Like, I think all of the casting is bad and it has nothing to do with the actors. I like most of the people who are cast in it. I just don't think any of them are the right person for the role.
That's unfortunate. Again, like, why did you do this?
Yeah.
If you're going through all this effort, why did you do it this way?
It's just so weird. It's like, Jack Black as Claptrap? It's like, I like Jack Black. I don't think he makes any sense for Claptrap.
He's got a decent range.
And like,
but like, he's just doing the voice.
Yeah, like Kate Blanchett as Lilith. And again, it's like, Kate Blanchett is a good actor. I don't think that she is a good call for Lilith at all. Like, Kevin Hart is Roland. And it's like,
oh.
I don't really like Kevin Hart, actually. But also, not a good choice for Roland. Like, what is happening? Why did... Jamie Lee Curtis, I fucking love. Doesn't make any sense to cast her as Tannis. Why would you do that?
Interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. I'll have to watch this trailer. I don't actually know a whole lot about Borderlands. I've played a little bit of it. But
It's just really weird. It's a weird decision. Why is Eli Roth directing it? Why, who's letting Eli Roth direct things?
I signed off on it. Sorry.
All of that is to say, Final Fantasy VII, very good. Remake makes me happy. And I have been playing through it on hard now that I've finished the DLC. Because I didn't have a lot to do this afternoon and I felt bad. So I just wanted to sit and play video games and not do physical things. And I'm up to like chapter 5 already. So I'm like almost a third of the way through on hard mode. And it has not been terrible.
Nice.
Yeah.
Achievable.
Yeah. I think I can get think I can get all the way through. I don't know if I'm going to be able to beat the DLC on hard mode. It's a lot harder already than the main game.
Oh. Well, something to work up to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing how Rebirth goes, and hopefully you'll eventually get time to play Cassette Beasts.
Someday.
Yeah. Hopefully I'll finish Cassette Beasts. It helps that I'm playing with Fran, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this was a fun ramble.
It was!
a little squirrely, but not in a bad way.
Yeah. One other thing I want to say about Final Fantasy VII Remake. Soundtrack is beautiful. So good.
Oh, yeah. That was really important for you, yes. Booting that up again.
I've had bombing missions stuck in my head for like a week. It's amazing.
You said the name of it, so now I have to put it in the episode where you said it. Great, thank you.
I'm pretty sure it's in the first episode of this podcast because mentioned it there too.
I have it downloaded. Well, any other songs you want to name drop while we're here?
Those Who Fight Further.
Thanks everyone for listening.
Yeah, thank you. Goodbye.